Rosemary, who lives in the apartment above mine, has a rabbit the size of a bobcat. She named him Ted. When Ted is angry or frightened, he thumps the floor in rapid succession. It sounds like drumming with a rubber mallet. Ted finds the squeak of the mail lady's letter cart particularly upsetting every day about noon. His drumming lasts as long as 5 minutes. Always, it wakes me. Noon is 2 hours earlier than I'd like to get up. I work nights, installing lights in office buildings. Big banks of fluorescent lights that hum like a subliminal symphony. It's not handyman work, as some people might assume. It's careful work. Those glass tubes are filled with gas and delicate as fine china. I love working at night. By night, I mean the early morning, from midnight till dawn. You see, I leave a building just as the world is waking. At that hour, the streetlights blink off, one by one. The traffic begins to percolate. The sun gleams gold from the highest windows over city canyons. And it's like I own the town, and my work has set everything right. And so I feel ready and deserving of a good sleep. When I don't get enough sleep, I crank up. My eyes itch, and my blood seems to flow like sludge through my veins, and little things get me angry. I like Ted well enough. I look after him when Rosemary goes away. Lately, it seems she's always away. She says she's in advertising, but I'm not so sure. She might be a hired assassin. She's very fit. She wears a phone receiver in her ear all the time. And whenever she gets a call and I'm around, she removes herself to whisper her conversation.
I really can't talk right now because there's someone to get into the details of the situation. It's collapsed at such time. If you understand what I'm saying.
Despite the flop of their ears, rabbits hear remarkably well. That's how Ted, on the second floor, can hear the squeak of the mail lady's cart on the sidewalk outside our building. Today, I catch the mail lady on her approach. She's a tall, ebony-complected woman who could be a fashion model, if she so chose. Always, she's plugged into her music pod. She seems uninterested in socializing. When I say, "Good afternoon," she glances up from the mail she's sorting, gives me a skeptical once-over, then nods a tentative greeting. When I say, "I'd like to oil your cart," she stops walking towards me and stands straighter, then says,
"You what?"
I can hear the hiss of music from her earphones 3 feet away. It sounds classical. "Your cart wheels are squeaky," I explain, raising my voice to make sure she hears me well. "And it upsets my rabbit. So I'd like to oil those wheels, if you don't mind."
"You got a rabbit?"
"It's not my rabbit, actually. It belongs to Rosemary, my neighbor."
"Then what business is it of yours?"
"I take care of the rabbit." Now she pulls out her earbuds and seems to sniff the air, like she's testing for leaking gas.
"This cart is federal property. You can't touch it."
Now that her pods are out, the music is especially loud in that funny, canned way peculiar to earbuds. "I don't need to touch it," I say. "I just need to oil the wheels."
"Like I say, you can't touch it."
I pause to take a careful breath. She seems upset. It wasn't my intention to upset her, but it's easy to upset people nowadays. because the world isn't the way it's supposed to be. What with terrorist threats and children snatched from the streets and banks stealing people's money. The mail lady's cart is a well-made thing, a big blue canvas hamper, perched on a tripod of wheels with an aluminum handle that projects like the tiller grip of an outboard motor. "I'm just trying to help," I say. "You can't hear the squeaking wheels because you're wearing earbuds."
"I'm allowed to wear earbuds."
She puts them back into her ears. "I'm happy for you," I say, immediately regretting this sassiness. "But the noise of this cart is a public nuisance. Just let me oil the wheels and everything will be great." I raise my spray can of WD-40 and waggle it in what I think is a friendly manner. She holds up one elegant cautionary finger.
"Don't wave that thing at me."
"It's for the wheels," I say, "not you."
"Step away from the cart or I'm calling the cops."
I back away. "I'm sorry. Really, I mean no harm." She edges past me and lets herself into the foyer of my building, glancing back to make sure I'm well away from her. I wait on the sidewalk. It's a misty morning, almost spring. I'm thinking I should have dressed better. I'm wearing a t-shirt, shorts with flip-flops, just got out of bed. My hair is mashed down all wrong. My t-shirt says, "You light up my world." It belongs to the company I work for. Ted is still thumping when I enter Rosemary's apartment 5 minutes later. "It's okay," I tell him. "She's gone." The place smells of cedar shavings and rotting vegetables. With the exception of a set of free weights where the dining room table should be, and an exotic rug in the living room, the apartment looks as generic as a middling hotel suite. Ted likes the living room. He sits centered on the burgundy tribal Afghan rug. This gives him the best view of his surroundings. It's strategic positioning, an expression of his wild side. He still thinks he has to watch for predators. He isn't Easter Bunny cute, but he has a rich granite-colored coat and a white belly and paws as big as a basset hound's. When I approach, he rears up on his hind legs and tests the air, whiskers twitching. He watches me expectantly, eagerly, I like to think, because I always carry a carrot. He prefers carrots with green tops, but those are expensive. Once a week, Rosemary drops money into my PayPal account for such things. From week to week, she doesn't know when she'll return. How suspicious does that sound to you? I sit on the couch and watch Ted whittle at his carrot. He's housebroken like a cat and uses a litter box to do his business. I owned a painted turtle when I was a kid. I got it in trade for a Super Blaster water rifle. My father didn't believe in owning pets.
"It's all we can do to feed ourselves,"
he said. It was a lame excuse because we weren't poor.
"It's all we can do to feed ourselves."
My sister said the turtle would die because of the paint someone had slathered on him to make him look more festive. He was a county fair prize. So I spent a couple of hours carefully scraping the paint off with a fingernail file and some emery cloth. I kept Horace in a plastic wading pool and fed him live worms and crickets, mostly. I knew enough to keep him in creek water and give him a sun lamp when he was indoors. He wasn't much of a pet, but in the 2 years I had him, I learned something about taking care. I let him go in a nearby pond where, my father said, he was probably eaten by a snapping turtle. When Sam, my girlfriend, comes over for lunch, she wants to watch Ted, so we take our sandwiches upstairs. When Ted crunches through an apple Sam hands him, she laughs. Then she says,
"What good is a rabbit, really?"
This question angers me, though I try not to show it because I know I'm cranked up from too little sleep. What good is anybody, I want to say. A pet is for petting, I say. Doesn't matter if it's a cat or a dog or a donkey. Sam is eating a prosciutto basil panini she brought from our favorite deli. It's a pricey sandwich, and she can't really afford it because she spends most of her money on clay. She works as a paralegal to support her sculpting. Today, she wears a three-piece suit. I can see the hint of her dragon tattoo just under the collar of her silk blouse. She says,
"Donkey, can you imagine a donkey as a pet?"
"I've seen a miniature horse as a pet," I say.
"No, you haven't."
"They're about the size of chihuahuas," I say. "Beautiful animals."
"You're such a liar."
She leans into me. I can smell her clay-like body odor. She says,
"When is Rosemary coming back?"
"I don't think she's ever coming back." I half believe this.
"That girl needs some decorating advice."
Still chewing her sandwich, Sam gets up and strides across the room to the flat-screen TV. Ted seems to follow her. He's waiting for a handout. "I don't feel like watching TV," I say.
"Did you know about this?"
She taps the TV screen. "About what?"
"This TV is fake, man. It's just a plastic prop."
She lifts it up for me to see, then sets it down lightly. "No way," I say.
"Way,"
she says.
"Didn't I tell you she's an assassin?"
"I'm calling her up," I say, "right now."
"And ask her what?"
I pull her number from my contacts, then I dial. I expect the number to be out of service, but then suddenly Rosemary is in my ear whispering,
"Is Ted okay?"
"Ted is fine," I say. "Why are you whispering?"
"I'm in a meeting. If this isn't an emergency, you'll have to call me back."
"Well, it's kind of an emergency." Suddenly I'm up talking because I'm nervous. I'm a little confused.
"What are you talking about?"
"It's your TV," I say. "Why do you have a fake TV?"
"Seriously? You call me for that?"
"It's just that..." She hangs up. I've been taking care of Ted for more than a year, and I've been dating Sam for just under 6 months. Pissing off Rosemary unsettles me because I don't want to alienate her. She's been a good neighbor. The first time I went to her apartment to complain about the thumping, she shook my hand and said,
"I appreciate your honesty. Come in and meet Ted."
Ted hopped up to me like he too was about to shake my hand. I knew nothing about rabbits. It's not that I fantasize about getting together with Rosemary, though she is an attractive woman in her 30s. Frankly, she scares me. I don't want to get on her wrong side.
"What?"
Sam asks.
"What?"
"I pissed her off," I say. "Serves me right." I pick up Ted and take him to the couch. He's not much for sitting in laps, but I pet him for as long as I can, maybe 2 minutes, while Sam stands there by the fake TV, looking stupefied. Then something hits the window behind the couch with a thump. At a yelp, flinching, Sam points behind me and exclaims,
"It's a pigeon! It just flew straight into the window!"
I turn around to gape. Then Ted starts drumming his alarm, his right foot pounding the floor.
"Wow,"
says Sam.
"He makes a lot of noise."
"A pigeon," I say from the window.
"Let's get out of here,"
Sam says. Later, at work, as I'm standing on a 12-foot rolling ladder fitting 8-foot fluorescents into their fixtures, I find myself wishing that Rosemary would call to tell me she's not coming back, that I am to sell everything I can from the apartment and then take Ted as my own. I didn't realize until this moment that I care that much about Ted. But now I have an overwhelming desire to possess Rosemary's rabbit. Is this some kind of weird sublimation? My assistant below calls up to me.
"Yo, you ready to roll?"
I snap, "No, I'm not ready." He says nothing. He stands there, holding the ladder rungs and staring up at me like my hair's on fire. I feel terrible. I'm sorry, I say. I'm out of sorts today, and I haven't been getting my sleep.
No problem,
he says, though I can tell I've upset him. By the time I get home, the sky is bright with morning. Birds are singing on this gorgeous day, and I wish I could stay up to watch the world wake itself. But I'm exhausted. Before going to bed, I make an executive decision. Ted will live with me until Rosemary returns. I plop him down at the foot of my bed. He perches there for a moment, his nose twitching. Then he hops off. I wonder if he's excited about the new digs. I leave several carrots near his water bowl. For the first time in a long time, Ted does not wake me up at noon when the mail lady arrives. I wake at 4. So late in the day, I'm not sure what time it is. I spring out of bed and slap at my phone to check the time. 40 minutes later, I'm telling Sam on the phone, I don't know where he is. I've looked everywhere.
I'll come by after work and look.
You don't have a key to my apartment, I remind her.
Oh, well,
she says.
That's right. We're not that far along, are we?
I kind of feel bad about this, that we're not that far along. But at the same time, I wonder how well I know Sam. And how serious I am about her. Then I wonder how serious I am about anything. I mean, I take my job seriously, and I'm seriously interested in taking care of Ted. But when I think about it, there's not a lot going on in my life. It seems I could do more. He couldn't have just disappeared into thin air, I say.
Rosemary's gonna kill you if something happened to that rabbit.
I want to protest. What kind of thing is that to say to me? Instead, I picture Rosemary putting a silencered pistol barrel to my head. Before going to work, I spend an hour outside scouring the alleys and calling for Ted. Then, sweaty and panicked, listening to my heart pounding in my ears like Ted beating his foot against the floor, I tell myself to stop being ridiculous. Ted is in my apartment, hiding somewhere. While at work, I keep thinking of the ways Rosemary might liquidate me. Every scenario features a silencered pistol, and everyone ends with my falling from a great height after Rosemary has poked me with that menacing pistol. I fall from skyscrapers and bridges and ladders and scenic overlooks. The worst part, though, is that I can't answer Rosemary's question.
Where is Ted?
I decide this has got to be one of the worst ways to go. Dying in ignorance. I can hardly concentrate on my work. Then I do what I've never done. I drop not one, but 2 new 6-foot bulbs, which pop when they hit the floor. White glass flying like confetti. As I stand there on my ladder, fearful and confused, my shocked assistant says,
Why don't you go home? I'll clean up.
After I get home, I stand stock still just inside the door and listen for several minutes. All I hear is water running through the sewer line behind the kitchen. Ted's carrots are untouched. I think of the pigeon flying into Rosemary's window earlier, how sometimes bizarre things happen for no good reason. Then I ask myself, what holds firm in such a world? What holds firm? I check my phone and wonder why Sam hasn't tried calling. Bitterly, I recall how she said, almost with glee.
Rosemary's gonna kill you
if something happened to that rabbit.
Is this nothing but a joke to her? Irritated, I'm about to phone Sam, but then realize it's 5 in the morning, tombstone quiet in this part of the world and as dark as my own ignorance. If I were a smarter person, would I be deserving of better breaks, a kinder girlfriend, a more understanding mail carrier? I dig around in the junk drawer in my kitchen and find the air horn I bought a few years ago when I thought I might do some backwoods camping. You need an air horn in case you encounter a bear, or so I read. I make one more thorough search of my apartment. It takes 45 minutes, and then, in desperation, I stand in my living room, hold the air horn over my head, and squeeze its trigger. The blast hits my ears like the smack of an open hand. I reel a bit, then recollect my balance, my ears ringing. Then I hear it, a muffled thumping of a rabbit's foot. It takes only a minute to locate him. Ted is stuck inside my couch. I pull away the cushions, then, carefully, with a box cutter, slice the black fabric that covers the frame, and just like that, I find Ted pinned under a seat brace, which he's half chewed through. As I pull him out, he seems none the worse for his adventure, though I don't understand why he felt compelled to make this exploration, digging up through the bottom of the couch, when, in his own home, he's never bothered. After I set Ted down in his own living room, he makes a few hops, then parks himself in the middle of his rug. He seems hunkered down. I leave him an apple, but he only sniffs it. Maybe he's more upset than I realized. I say, "Hey, Buckaroo, everything's copacetic now. Relax." Back in my apartment, I put earplugs in before getting into bed, though they do little good. I don't bother closing the shades to the bright announcement of a new day. I'm so tired, I'm sure I'll sleep hard, just as I'm sure that come noon, I'll hear drumming on the floor above, because Ted will think he's heard something mysterious and sinister outside. In his rabbit mind, he must see himself as the world's sentinel, calling you and me and everybody to be on guard because threats are everywhere. That's the world we live in, and you're crazy if you don't understand this. Crazy not to heed a call that says, as clearly and loudly as a rap on your door, "Wake up. This is not a drill."
A radio adaptation of Rosemary's Rabbit from Ron Tanner's story collection titled Diversity. Tanner is also the author of A Bed of Nails, Kiss Me Stranger, an illustrated novel, and From Animal House to Our House, a memoir. He teaches writing at Loyola University, Maryland. He directs the Marshall Islands Story Project, and you can find him online at ronaldtanner.com. Our radio adaptation was produced, narrated, and musically scored by Signal producer Aaron Hankin. Thanks go out to our radio actors. In the role of postal carrier, Ashley Ramsey. In the role of girlfriend, Kathy Carson. In the role of Rosemary, Nikki Gamer. In the role of co-worker, Joel McCord. And in the role of dad, Tony Brandon. You can hear this story and others on demand at wipr.org/programs/signal.